We continue now with the breviary, the Roman breviary for summer, and the feast, July 7th, of St. Cyril and Methodius, from the encyclical letter of Pope Leo XIII. When favorable news brought the fame of these achievements to Rome, the holy Nicholas I, supreme pontiff, commanded these excellent, illustrious brethren to come to Rome. Having set out on their journey to Rome, they carried with them the relics of the supreme pontiff, St. Clement I, which Cyril had discovered in the Chersonese. At this news, Adrian II, who had succeeded on the death of Nicholas, went forth with a party of the clergy and people to meet them, in token of their great veneration. Then Cyril and Methodius informed the supreme pontiff, in the presence of the clergy, regarding the apostolic ministry in which they had been engaged in such a holy and laborious manner. But when they were called to account by certain envious persons with this accusation, that they had unlawfully made use of the Slavonic tongue in the performance of the sacred rites, such weighty and clear reasons did they allege for so doing, that the pontiff and the clergy both praised and approved these men. Then, both having sworn that they would stand fast in the faith of Blessed Peter and of the Roman pontiffs, they were consecrated bishops by Adrian. But it was God's will that Cyril, ripe rather in virtue than in age, should end his course at Rome. And so his dead body was borne in a public funeral to the very grave that Adrian had prepared for himself. Later, it was taken to St. Clement's and buried near the Pope's ashes. And as it was being carried through the city, amidst the festive chanting of psalms, in a triumphal rather than in a funeral procession, the Roman people seemed to be paying to that very holy man the first fruits of heavenly honors. But Methodius, having returned to Moravia, was a real example to his flock, and day by day strove more zealously to further Catholic interests. He likewise confirmed in the faith of Christ the Pannonians, Bulgarians, and Dalmatians. Moreover, he labored much among the Corinthians, to bring them over to the worship of the one true God. Being once more accused to John VIII, who had succeeded Pope Adrian, of unsound faith and a violation of the custom of the ancients, he was summoned to Rome, where in presence of John, several bishops, and the clergy of the city, he easily and absolutely vindicated his possession of the Catholic faith and proved that he had steadfastly retained it and had diligently taught it to others. But as to his having unlawfully made use of the Slavonic language in the sacred rites, he had acted according to law, for definite reasons, in accordance with the dispensation of Pope Adrian, and not incompatibly with the Holy Scriptures. Wherefore, embracing the cause of Methodius in the matter at issue, the Pope ordered the ratification of his archiepiscopal power and his Slavonian mission, and gave him letters to that effect. Therefore, Methodius returned to Moravia and persevered in fulfilling still more vigilantly the duties of his charge, for which he gladly suffered exile. He brought over the Prince of the Bohemians and his wife to the faith, and spread Christianity far and wide among that race. He carried the light of the gospel into Poland, and as some writers assert, founded the episcopal see of Lemberg, and having gone into Muscovy, properly so called, he established a pontifical throne at Kiev. At length, he returned to his own people in Moravia, and now feeling that he was fast approaching the end of his life, he himself appointed his successor, and with his final commands, exhorting the clergy and people to virtue, he most peacefully departed this life, which he made his path to heaven. Even as Rome had done to Cyril, so did Moravia lavish the highest honors on Methodius when dead. And their feast, which had been long accustomed to be kept among the Slavonic peoples, the supreme pontiff, Leo XIII, ordered to be celebrated yearly throughout the universal church with a proper mass and office. July 8th, St. Elizabeth, Queen and Widow. Elizabeth of the royal race of Aragon was born in the year of Christ 1271. As a sign of her future sanctity, her parents, contrary to custom, passing over the names of her mother and grandmother, gave her in baptism the name of her maternal great-aunt, St. Elizabeth, Lady of Thuringia. No sooner was she born than it became evident what a blessed peacemaker she was to be between kings and kingdoms, for the happy event of her birth turned into harmony the ruinous quarrels of her father and grandfather. For the father, afterwards admiring the natural abilities of the growing daughter, declared that this one Elizabeth would far outstrip in virtue the rest of the women descended of the royal blood of Aragon. So much did he venerate her heavenly manner of life, her contempt of bodily ornaments, her abhorrence of pleasures, her assiduity in fasting, her constant recitations of prayers to God, her activity in charitable works, that he attributed to the merits of his daughter alone the prosperity of his kingdom and that of his own property. At length, well known everywhere and sought by many princes, she was united in matrimony to Denis, King of Portugal, with proper Christian ceremonies. In the married state, she gave herself up no less to the exercise of virtue than to the education of her children, striving to please her husband, but still more to please God. For nearly half the year she sustained herself only on bread and water, which was miraculously changed into wine during a certain illness she had, since she had refused to drink the wine prescribed by the physicians. She instantaneously cured a poor woman of a loathsome ulcer by tenderly kissing it. In the depth of winter, she changed the money she was going to distribute to the poor into roses in order to conceal it from the king. She gave sight to a virgin born blind. She healed many other persons of grievous illness by the mere sign of the cross, and she performed many miracles of this nature. She not merely built, but also magnificently endowed monasteries, colleges, and churches. She was admirable in composing the differences of kings, and unwearied in alleviating the public and private misfortunes of mankind. After the death of King Denis, she, who had been in her youth a model of all the virtues to virgins, and in her married life to wives, so in her loneliness was she to widows. For she had once put on the religious habit of St. Clare, assisting with composure at the royal funeral, and soon after, proceeding to Compostela, made votive offerings of articles of silk, of silver, of gold, and also jewels for the king's soul. Then, returning home, she expended in holy and pious works all she had left that was dear and precious to her. She completed her truly royal convent of virgins at Coimbra, and wholly engaged in feeding the poor, protecting widows, sheltering orphans, and assisting the afflicted in every way. She lived not for herself, but for the glory of God and the well-being of all men. In order to make peace between the two kings, her son and her son-in-law, she came to the famous town of Estremoz and was seized with an illness contracted on the journey. And there, after having been visited by the Virgin Mother of God, she died a most holy death, July 4th, 1336. After her death, she was glorified by many miracles, especially by the sweet fragrance of her body, which was now remained incorrupt for nearly 300 years, and she is always distinguished by the name of the Holy Queen. At length, in the year of Jubilee and of our salvation, 1625, with the unanimous applause of the assembled Christian world, she was solemnly enrolled among the saints by Urban VIII. July 10th, the seven holy brothers, martyrs, and Saints Rufina and Secunda, virgins and martyrs. Seven brothers, the sons of Saint Felicitas, were tempted at Rome in the persecution of Marcus Aurelius Antonius by the prefect Publius, first by flatteries and then by threats, to renounce Christ and adore the gods. But owing to their own valor and to their mother's encouragement, they persevered in their confession of faith and were put to death in various ways. Denarius was scourged with leaded whips. Felix and Philip were beaten with clubs. Silvanus was thrown headlong from a great height. Alexander, Vitalis, and Martial were beheaded. Their mother gained the same palm of martyrdom 4 months later. The brothers gave up their souls to the Lord on the 6th of the Ides of July, July 10th. Rufina and Secunda were sisters and Roman virgins. Their parents had betrothed them to Armentarius and Verinus, but they refused to marry because they had consecrated their virginity to Jesus Christ. They were apprehended during the reign of the emperors Valerian and Gallienus. When Junius, the prefect, could not shake their resolution, either by promises or by threats, he first ordered Rufina to be beaten with rods. While the latter was being scourged, Secunda thus addressed the judge, "Why do you treat my sister thus honorably and me dishonorably? Order us both to be scourged, since we both confess Christ to be God." Enraged by these words, the judge ordered them both to be cast into a dark and evil-smelling dungeon. Immediately a very bright light and a most sweet odor filled the place. They were then shut up in the hottest chamber of a bathhouse, and when they came out unharmed from this also, they were then thrown into the Tiber with stones tied to their necks. But an angel delivered them from that place, and they were beheaded at the 10th milestone from the city on the Aurelian Way. Their bodies were buried by a matron named Plautilla on her estate, and were afterwards transferred to the city and laid in the Basilica of Constantine near the baptistry. From a sermon of St. Augustine, Bishop, "Brethren, a wonderful sight is set before the eyes of our faith. We have heard with our ears, we have seen in our minds a mother who, with a mind differing by far from that of ordinary human nature, wished her sons to leave this life before her. For all men wish to depart from this life before their children, not to follow them. She wished rather to die the last, for she did not lose her sons, but sent them before her. Neither did she consider the life they were ending, but that which they were beginning. They ceased to live a life which at some time must end with death, and they began to live one which is everlasting. The lesser wonder is it that she should watch them die. Rather should we marvel that she encouraged them. Her valor was more fruitful than her childbearing. Seeing them contending, she herself contended in all those struggles, and in the triumph of all, she herself conquered." July 11th, St. Pius I, Pope and Martyr. John Galbert was born at Florence of a noble family. While in compliance with his father's wishes, he was following a military career, it happened that his only brother, Hugh, was slain by a relative. On Good Friday, John, accompanied by an armed band, met the slayer alone and unarmed in a spot where they could not avoid each other. Seeing death imminent, the murderer, with arms outstretched in the form of a cross, begged for mercy, and John, through reverence for the Holy Cross, graciously spared his life. Having received his enemy as a brother, he went to pray in the church of San Miniato, which was near at hand, and as he was adoring the image of the crucified one, he saw it bend its head towards him. John was deeply touched by this miracle, and determined thereafter to fight for God alone, even against his father's wish. So on the spot he cut off his hair and put on the monastic habit. Very soon his pious and religious virtues shed abroad so great a luster that he became to many a rule and pattern of perfection. And so on the death of the abbot of that place, he was unanimously chosen superior. But the servant of God, preferring obedience rather than command, and being reserved by the divine will for greater things, went to Romwald, who was then living in the desert of Camaldoli, from whom he received a supernatural prediction of the order he was about to found. He then established this order of his under the rule of Saint Benedict at Vallombrosa. Soon afterwards, many, on account of the renown of his sanctity, flocked to him from all sides. He received them into his society, and together with them he zealously devoted himself to rooting out the deformities of heresy and simony, and to propagating the apostolic faith. And on account of this devotedness, both he and his disciples suffered innumerable hardships. Thus his enemies, that they might destroy him and his brethren, suddenly attacked the monastery of San Salvi by night, burned the church, demolished the buildings, and mortally wounded all the monks. The man of God restored them all immediately to health by a single sign of the cross. On this occasion, Peter, one of his monks, miraculously walked unhurt through a huge blazing fire. And so John obtained for himself and his brethren the peace they so much desired. Thereafter, he removed the stain of simony from Tuscany and restored the faith throughout all Italy to its former purity. He built many monasteries from the very foundations, and restored others, both as to structure and as to regular observance, and fortified them with holy regulations. In order to feed the poor, he sold the furnishings of the church. The very elements were subject to him in restraining evildoers, while the cross served him as a sword for repressing the demons. At length, worn out by abstinence, vigils, fastings, prayer, maceration of the flesh, and old age, to a grievous malady, during which he repeated very frequently those words of David, "My soul has thin God. When shall I come and appear before the face of God?" And at last, calling together his disciples, he exhorted them to brotherly harmony and requested that the following words be written on a paper, which he wished should be buried with him. "I, John, believe and confess the faith which the holy apostles preached, and the holy fathers in the four councils have confirmed." Finally, having been honored during 3 days with the gracious presence of angels, in the 78th year of his age, he passed to the Lord at Passignano, where he is honored with the highest veneration, in the year of salvation, 1073, on the 4th of the Ides of July, July 12th, and having become celebrated by innumerable miracles, was enrolled by Celestine III in the number of the saints. July 13, Saint Anacletus, Pope and Martyr. Anacletus, an Athenian, governed the church in the days of the Emperor Trajan. He decreed that a bishop should be consecrated by no fewer than 3 bishops, that clerics should be publicly admitted to holy orders by their own bishop, and that at Mass all should communicate after the consecration. He adorned the tomb of Blessed Peter and set aside a place for the burial of the pontiffs. He held 2 ordinations in the month of December and made 5 priests, 3 deacons, and 6 bishops. He reigned 9 years, 3 months, and 10 days, was crowned with martyrdom, and buried on the Vatican Hill. From the commentary of St. Ambrose, Bishop, on Psalm 118. "Princes have persecuted me without cause, and my heart hath been in awe of thy words. Rightly does the martyr say that he suffers persecution unjustly, for he has committed no robbery, oppressed no man, shed no blood, and had no thought of adultery. He is not liable to the laws, and he is punished more grievously than a robber. He speaks justly, and men will not listen. He speaks words of salvation, and men fight against him, so that he can well say, 'When I spoke to them, they fought against me without cause.' Thus he suffers persecution without cause, though no sin is laid to his charge, and yet men fight against him. They fight against him as an evildoer, although in his confession of God he is worthy of praise. They fight against him as a sorcerer, though all his glory is in the name of the Lord, for that love is the source from which springs all virtues. In truth, they fight against him in vain when they accuse him of impiety amongst the impious and unbelieving, for he is a master in the faith. But one against whom men fight without cause ought to be brave and steadfast. How then does the martyr add, "And my heart hath been in fear of thy words"? Fear belongs to the weak, the timid, and the fearful. But there is a weakness which is unto salvation, and a fear which is holy. Fear the Lord, all ye his saints, and blessed is the man that feareth the Lord. Why is he called blessed? Because he shall delight exceedingly in his commandments. July 14th, Saint Bonaventure, Bishop, Confessor, and Doctor of the Church. Bonaventure, born at Bagnaria in Tuscany, when a boy, escaped unharmed from a deadly sickness by the prayers of Blessed Francis, to whose order his mother had dedicated him if he should recover. On this account, while still a youth, Bonaventure begged to be admitted among the friars minor. He had as his master Alexander of Hales, and became in a short time so eminent in learning that, having taken a master's degree at Paris at the end of 7 years, he publicly explained the books of the sentences with great applause. Later on, he also published excellent commentaries on the same books. He was distinguished not only for the profundity of his learning, but for the integrity of his morals, the innocence of his life, his humility, meekness, contempt of earthly things, and desire of heavenly treasures, and was fully worthy to be regarded as a model of perfection and to be called a saint by Blessed Thomas Aquinas, to whom he was united by ties of the closest friendship. For Thomas, finding Bonaventure engaged in writing the life of Saint Francis, said, "Let us permit a saint to labor for a saint." He was consumed with the flame of divine love, and had a special feeling of devotion to the Passion of Christ the Lord, which was the subject of constant meditation to him, and to the Virgin Mother of God, to whose service he vowed himself. And this devotion he strove also to arouse in others, both by word and example, and he labored to spread it by his writings and treatises. And so came that sweetness of manner, grace of speech, and the charity which he extended to all, by which he completely and utterly conquered every soul. Wherefore, when only 35 years of age, he was elected at Rome by unanimous consent Minister General of the Order, and having accepted the office, he fulfilled it for 18 years with admirable prudence and the recognition of his sanctity. He made many rules useful for regular discipline and the increase of the order, which together with the other mendicant orders he defended successfully against the calumnies of their enemies. He was summoned to the Council of Lyon by Blessed Gregory X, and having been created Cardinal Bishop of Albano, he diligently performed a noted work for the Council in very difficult circumstances, in which the divisions of the schism were composed and the dogmas of the Church vindicated. In the midst of these labors, he died, to the great grief of all, in the 53rd year of his age, and in the year of salvation 1274, and his funeral was honored by the whole council and by the presence of the Roman pontiff himself. Sixtus IV, after Bonaventure had become illustrious for many and great miracles, placed him in the list of the saints. He wrote many books, in which the highest erudition and the fire of piety were so united as both to touch and instruct the reader. Sixtus V, on this account, worthily distinguished him by the name of the Seraphic Doctor. July 15th, Saint Henry, Emperor and Confessor. Henry, surnamed the Pious, Duke of Bavaria, became King of Germany, and afterwards Emperor of the Romans. Not satisfied, however, with the narrowness of the temporal kingdom, he strove to gain an immortal crown by giving zealous service to the Eternal King. For having obtained the empire, he devoted himself earnestly to spreading religion, and rebuilt with great magnificence the churches which had been destroyed by the infidels, endowing them generously both with money and lands. He built monasteries and other pious establishments, and increased the income of others. The bishopric of Bamberg, which he had founded out of his family possessions, he made tributary to Blessed Peter and the Roman Pontiff. When Benedict VIII, who had crowned him emperor, was obliged to seek safety in flight, Henry received him and restored him to his see. When he was suffering from a severe illness in the monastery of Monte Cassino, the holy Benedict cured him by a marvelous miracle. He endowed the Roman Church with far-reaching privileges, undertook in her defense a war against the Greeks, and recovered Apulia, which they had held for some time. It was his custom to undertake nothing without prayer, and at times he saw the angel of the Lord and the holy martyrs, his patrons, fighting for him at the head of his army. Aided thus by the divine protection, he overcame barbarous nations more by prayer than by arms. Pannonia, being still pagan, he gave his sister in marriage to King Stephen, who, being baptized, brought the nation to the faith of Christ. He set the rare example of preserving virginity in the married state, and just before his death he gave back his wife, Saint Cunegunda, inviolate, to her relatives. At length, having arranged all things relating to the glory and advantage of the empire with the greatest prudence, and having left in different places throughout Gaul, Italy, and Germany splendid monuments of his munificence towards religion, after the most sweet odor of his heroic virtue had spread far and wide, till he was more celebrated by his holiness than by his scepter, his life's work was accomplished, and he was called by the Lord to the rewards of the heavenly kingdom, in the year of salvation 1024. His body was buried in the church of the blessed apostles Peter and Paul at Bamberg. God glorified his servant, and immediately many miracles were worked at his tomb. When these were properly proved and certified, Eugenius III inscribed his name in the catalog of the saints. July 16th, commemoration of the Blessed Virgin Mary of Mount Carmel. When the holy day of Pentecost, the apostles, through heavenly inspiration, spoke in foreign tongues and worked many wonders by the invocation of the most sacred name of Jesus, it is said that many men who were walking in the footsteps of the holy prophets Elias and Eliseus and had been prepared for the coming of Christ by the heralding of St. John the Baptist, saw and were assured of the truth. They at once embraced the faith of the gospel and began to venerate the most blessed Virgin, whose conversations and familiar intercourse they were happily able to enjoy with a certain peculiar affection, so that they, before all others, built a chapel to that purest of virgins on that very spot of Mount Carmel, where Elias of old had seen a cloud arising, a remarkable symbol of the Virgin. Therefore, many times each day they came together to the new oratory, and with pious ceremonies, prayers, and praises honored the Most Blessed Virgin as the special protectress of their order. For this reason, they began to be called the Brethren of Our Lady of Mount Carmel everywhere and by all, and the Supreme Pontiffs not only confirmed this title, but also granted special indulgences to whoever should call either the whole order or individual brothers by that name. But the most noble Virgin not only gave them such a great title and patronage, but also the badge of the Holy Scapular. This she bestowed upon Blessed Simon, the Englishman, so that the sacred order might be differentiated by this heavenly vesture and be protected by it from the evils that were assailing it. And finally, since of old the order was unknown in Europe, and on this account many were importuning Honorius III for its abolition, the most tender Virgin Mary appeared by night to our Honorius and distinctly commanded him to receive both the Institute and its members with kindness. The Most Blessed Virgin, by many privileges, has distinguished this order which is so acceptable to her, not only in this world, but also in another world, since everywhere her power and her mercy count for very much. For it is piously believed that those of her children who, having been enrolled in the confraternity of the scapular, have observed the slight abstinence and have said the few prayers prescribed and have observed chastity as far as their state of life demands, will certainly be comforted by her maternal affection while they are being purified in the fire of purgatory, and will, through her intercession, be taken from there as soon as possible to the heavenly fatherland. Therefore, the order, laden with so many and such great favors, has instituted a solemn commemoration of the Blessed Virgin to be celebrated year by year in perpetual observance to the glory of that same Virgin. July 17th, Saint Alexius, Confessor. Alexius, of the highest rank among the Romans, on account of his exceeding love for Jesus Christ by a special inspiration from God, left his wife untouched on the first night of marriage and undertook a pilgrimage to the most famous churches of the world. For 17 years he remained unknown while on these pilgrimages, and eventually his name was revealed at Edessa, a city in Syria, by an image of the Most Holy Virgin Mary, whereupon he departed by sea. Having landed at the port of Rome, he was received as a guest by his own father, who took him for an impoverished foreigner. He lived in his father's house, unknown to all, for 17 years, and then passed to heaven in the time of the supreme pontiff, Innocent I, leaving a written paper which revealed his name, his family, and the story of his whole life. The simplicity of the just man is laughed to scorn. This is the wisdom of this world, to hide one's feelings by artifice, to veil one's thoughts in words, to make falsehood of truth falsehood. Certainly, this prudence young man learned by experience, and boys pay to learn it. Those who know it take pride in it, looking down on the others. Those who know it not, humbly and timidly admire the others who know it. This evil of duplicity, veiled under an honorable name, is esteemed by them, and perversity of mind is called good breeding. This wisdom will have its votaries seek after the highest dignities, rejoice in the vanity of earthly glory, and repay with interest any injuries they may have received. It teaches them never to give way to others while they have strength to resist, and to obtain by a feigned goodness what they cannot by open wickedness. Whereas, on the contrary, the wisdom of the just is not to practice dissimulation, to speak what is in one's heart, to love the truth as it is, and to avoid falsehood, to do good without looking for return, and gladly to suffer evil rather than inflict it, never to seek revenge for an injury, and to think it a gain to suffer reproach for the sake of the truth. But this simplicity of the just is laughed to scorn, for the wise of this world look upon purity of heart as foolishness. Whatsoever is done by innocence seems to these carnal minds merely stupidity, and whatsoever is approved by truth is to them but folly. What is more foolish in the eyes of the world than to make our words express our thought, not to use dissimulation, not to repay injuries with abuse, to pray for those who speak evil of us, to abandon our possessions and to seek after poverty, not to resist him who takes from us what is ours, and to offer the other cheek to him who smites us. July 18th, Saint Camillus de Lellis, Confessor. Camillus was born at Bacianico, a town of the diocese of Chieti, of the noble family of the Lelli, his mother being 60 years old when he was born. While pregnant, she dreamt that she gave birth to a little boy bearing the mark of a cross on his breast and marching before an army of boys bearing the same sign. As a young man, he followed a military career and gave himself up for a time to worldly vices, until, in his 25th year, he was so enlightened by heavenly grace and seized with so great a sorrow for having offended God that on the spot, shedding really copious tears, he firmly resolved unceasingly to wipe away the uncleanness of his past life and to put on the new man. And so, on the very day of his conversion, which happened to be the feast of the purification of the Most Blessed Virgin, he hastened to the friars minor, who were called Capuchins, and begged with the most earnest prayers to be admitted into their number. His request was granted on this and on a subsequent occasion, but each time a loathsome ulcer from which he had suffered for some time broke out again upon his shin, and he humbly submitted himself to the divine providence, which was preparing him for greater things. And conquering himself, he twice laid aside that religious habit which he had twice asked for and received. He went out for Rome, and was received into the hospital which is called the Incurables, and its management was entrusted to him because of his evident virtues, and he discharged it with the greatest integrity and a truly paternal solicitude. He considered himself a servant of all the accustomed to make their beds, to cleanse their filth, to dress their sores, and to aid them in their last agony by pious prayers and exhortations. And in these offices he gave striking proofs of his wonderful patience, unconquered fortitude, and heroic charity. But when he perceived how great an advantage a knowledge of letters would be to him in assisting those in danger of death, to whom alone he had life, he was at the age of turn again to school among boys to learn the first elements of grammar. Being afterwards ordained priest, he was joined by a few companions and laid the first foundations of a congregation of regular clerics, ministering to the sick, the enemy of the human race, vainly striving to oppose it. For Camillus was marvelously strengthened by a vision that was sent him, a heavenly voice coming from an image of Christ crucified, and even the hands, by a wonderful miracle, torn away from the wood, stored him, and he obtained the approbation of his order from the apostolic see. Its members bind themselves by a fourth and very hard vow to minister even to the sick infected with the plague. The holy Philip Neri, the confessor of Camillus, acknowledged how pleasing this institution was to God and how profitable for the salvation of souls. For Philip declared that he often saw angels suggesting words to the disciples of Camillus when they were assisting the agonies of the dying. When he had thus bound himself with even closer bonds to the service of the sick, it is to be marveled at with what eagerness, untired by any labor, frightened by no danger to life, he watched over their interests until their last breath. He became all things to all men, and seized upon every one of the most menial offices with the most humble compliance, very often on bended knees, as though he saw Christ himself present in the sick, and performed these offices with cheerful readiness. And that he might be at the beck and call the needy, he of his own accord resigned the general government of the order, and deprived himself of the heavenly delights with which he was inundated during contemplation. But his fatherly love for the unfortunate shone out with greater brilliancy when the city was suffering, first from a contagious distemper, and then from a great scarcity of provisions, and when a dreadful plague was ravaging Nola in Campania. In a word, he was consumed with so great a love of God and his neighbor that he was called an angel, and merited to be helped by the angels in various dangers which threatened him on his journeys. He was endowed with the gift of prophecy and the grace of healing, and he also could read the secret of hearts. And by his prayers he at one time multiplied food, and at another changed water into wine. At length, worn out by watching, fasting, and ceaseless labor, he seemed to be nothing but skin and bone. Having endured courageously 5 long and troublesome sicknesses, which he used to call the mercies of the Lord, at Rome, fortified by the sacraments, with the most sweet names of Jesus and Mary on his lips, while these words were being said, "Gentle and joyous, may the countenance of Christ Jesus appear to you," he died at the hour he had foretold. He fell asleep in the Lord on the day before the Ides of July, July 14, in the year of salvation, 1614, the 65th of his age. He was made illustrious by many miracles, and Benedict the 14th, by solemn rite, added him to the calendar of the saints. Leo the 13th, at the desire of the bishops of the Catholic world, and on the recommendation of the Congregation of Rites, declared him the heavenly patron of all hospitals and of the sick in all places, and ordered his name to be invoked in the litany for the dying. We will continue with the Roman bravery on tape number 3.